Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. I'm Dr. David Adams, and this week we will be examining, as our Old Testament lesson, Exodus chapter 24, verses 3 to 11. This text is the perfect example of how one must read and understand a passage in the context of its place in the broader narrative, if we're to understand it correctly. For this account, stands in the middle of a critical sequence in the second half of the book of Exodus. The covenant ceremony in our text concludes the sequence that begins in chapter 19 with the arrival of Israel at Mount Sinai and continues with the giving of the Torah, the Ten Commandments in chapter 20, and the rest of God's instruction to Israel in chapters 21 to 23. This same covenant ceremony establishes the context for the incident of Israel's worship of God in the form of a golden calf in chapter 32. And God's response to it in chapters 33 and 34. Since understanding the place of this text in that sequence is critical to interpreting the text correctly, we will discuss this further after we've looked at the text itself. First, we begin with the text as we turn to Exodus chapter 24, verse 3. Vayava Moshe, Vayisaper la'am eth kol divrei Yahweh v'eth kol hamishpatim. Then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of Yahweh and all the judgments. Vaya'an kol ha'am kol echad, and all the people answered with one voice. Here the phrase kol echad, one voice, is a classic example of what we might describe grammatically as an adverbial accusative. Of course, the term accusative is technically misleading since we do not have cases in Hebrew, but the point is that it functions the way that the accusative case sometimes functions in other languages. In this case, we would call this an accusative of manner, indicating how the action was performed, namely, with one voice. The verse continues, Vayomru kol hadaravim esher diber Yahweh na'aseh. And they said, all the words that Yahweh has spoken we will do. The content of this oath is critical to the unfolding of the story. For the second time in this sequence, the first time was in chapter 19, verse 8, the whole people of Israel have sworn to keep the entire teaching of Yahweh, the Ten Commandments and the material following it in chapters 21 to 23, perfectly. God's demand of their perfect obedience and the people's commitment to that perfect obedience is crucial to the events that follow. Verse 4. Vayiktov Moshe eth kol diber Yahweh. Then Moses wrote all the words of Yahweh. By writing these words down, Moses made clear exactly what Israel had sworn to obey, so that there can be no doubt later about their commitment. Vayeskem baboker. And he arose early in the morning. The Hebrew word shakam does not mean simply to do something or to get up. It always implies an early time frame for the action. And so we translate either did early or got up early. Vayiven mizbeach tachat hahar, and he built an altar at the foot of the mountain. The Hebrew text literally says under the mountain, but this is the normal Hebrew idiom for referring to the base of the mountain, or as we would commonly say, the foot of the mountain, which is where Moses built the altar. Vayishtem esrei matzeba lishneim asar shivtei Yisrael, and 12 sanding stones for the 12 tribes of Israel. In Hebrew, the word matzeba, or standing stone, is singular because it is what grammarians would call a class noun, a noun that represents the entire class or group of something. Such class nouns in Hebrew are normally singular. McAllister excavated a similar cultic structure in Gezer in Israel, finding an altar surrounded by a number of large standing stones. We don't know the size of the standing stones that Moses used. They come in all sizes from a foot tall to 12 feet tall. And these could have been anywhere in between. They are not typically carved with an image or figure, although they are sometimes shaped so that there's a curve or bend at the top. The use of such standing stones was prohibited by God later in Israel's history because of their strong association with the worship of Canaanite gods. So it's not surprising that some later scribes were uncomfortable with the idea that Moses would have used them. As a result, we have a textual variant here that substitutes Evan, the common word for stone in Hebrew, in place of Matseba, with its negative theological associations. Though clearly, Matseba is the correct original word. Verse 5. Vayishlach et na'arei b'nei Yisrael. Then he sent out the young men of the sons of Israel. Vaya'alu oloth, and they offered up burnt offerings. Vayizbeku zvachim shalamim la'yahweh parim. And they sacrificed peace offerings, Zevachim Shalim, to Yahweh, consisting of bulls. These two types of offerings, whole burnt offerings, the Oloth, referred to in the text, and peace offerings, the Shalamim, referred to in the text, often occur together in the Old Testament. Both refer to animal sacrifices, and there were a variety of these in the Old Testament sacrificial system. But one key difference lies in the fact that the whole burnt offering was intended for God alone, and was burned on the altar until it was entirely consumed, while the peace offering was not burned entirely on the altar, and was eaten by those who offered up the sacrifice. This is connected with the covenant meal that God shares with the elders of Israel later in our account, in which both they and God partake of the results of these offerings. The word parim, bulls, at the end of the text is another adverbial accusative, in this case functioning as what we might call an accusative of specification. That is, it specifies that of which the peace offering consisted, namely bulls. So I translated peace offerings to Yahweh consisting of bulls. Such adverbial accusatives are most commonly placed at the end of clauses, as this one is here, and they often give the appearance of being stuck on to the end of the clause. Verse 6. Vayakach Moshe Katzi Hadam. Then Moses took half of the blood, Vayasim B'Aganoth, and placed it in Aganoth, in bowls, Vakatzi Hadam Zarach Al Mizbeach, and half of the blood he tossed upon the altar. The word zarach, translated tossed, is sometimes translated sprinkled. However we translate it, the word is commonly used for the cultic action of strewing blood upon the altar as part of the sacrifice. It's used that way a number of times in the Old Testament. Verse 7. Vayikach Sefer Habarith, then he, referring to Moses, he took the Book of the Covenant. Most of the challenge with this phrase is related to the identity of this Book of the Covenant. In the context, it is almost certainly what Moses wrote, as described back in verse 4. But what was that? Probably the majority view among commentators is that it refers to the material in chapters 21 to 23. And perhaps also including the Ten Commandments in chapter 20. This view is so common that chapters 21 to 23 of Exodus are commonly referred to simply as the Book of the Covenant. And this is probably correct, especially if we include chapter 30 as part of the designation. For as the account stands, the material from chapters 20 to 23 is clearly presented as the basis of the covenant that God is making with Israel. So the text continues, Vayikrab Ozne Ha'am. Then he called out in the ears of the people. In this case, kara, call out, means to read something aloud. So we should probably translate this as, and he read it aloud in the hearing of the people. Vayomru, call asher deber Yahweh, na'aseh v'nishma. And they said, all that Yahweh has spoken, we will do, and we will obey. Now this is the second time in our text, and the third time overall in this sequence, that Israel has repeated this oath. The repetition serves to underscore the importance of Israel's oath to perfect obedience to the covenant. All that God has spoken, we will do, they say. Israel understands that God expects perfect obedience to his teaching, and they declare their intention to obey his teaching perfectly. This is critical to the way that the story unfolds, because there is no provision for failure in the covenant that God is making with them. Verse 8. Vayakak Moshe et Hadam, vayizrok al Ha'am. Then Moses took the blood and tossed it upon the people. This, of course, refers to the blood that had been previously placed in bowls. This is the only time in the Old Testament that the blood of a sacrifice is said to have been thrown upon the people, pointing out the singular importance of this moment in the history of Israel's relationship with Yahweh. The blood is being thrown upon both the altar and the people, binding them together and sealing the relationship that is formalized in this covenant-making ceremony. In other cultures, they might be described as blood brothers by the sharing of blood or the binding of the blood through this act. The Old Testament doesn't use that language, but the idea of their being united and joined together by the blood which is cast both upon the altar and upon the people is clear. The verse continues, Vayomer hene dam habarith asher krath Yahweh imakim al kal hadaravarim ha'ele. And he said, behold the blood of the covenant that Yahweh has cut, or made, with you on the basis of all these words. The last phrase here is particularly important, for it underscores yet again, for the third time in this passage, and the fourth time overall, that Yahweh expects the people to keep all the words of his teaching. For, as Moses says, it is on the basis of all of these words that the covenant is established. This raises a question that is left hanging in the account. What will happen if Israel fails to keep all of the words of God's teaching perfectly, and so breaks the covenant that Yahweh has made with them? This ends the scene of the covenant-making ceremony. The next verse begins a new scene, in which God celebrates with Moses and the elders of the people the covenant that he had made with Israel by eating a meal with them. Verse 9. Vaya'al Moshe va'acharon Nadav v'Abihu v'Shiv'im Mizkenei Yisrael. Then Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up. In Hebrew, the verb is singular, because when we have a compound subject such as this, Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, it is common for the verb to reflect the number of the first subject in the sequence. In this case, Moses, which is, of course, singular. Verse 10. Vayir'u el Elohei Yisrael, and they saw the God of Israel. Vatakath raglau, and beneath his feet, kama'aseh livnath hasapir, was like something made from lapis lazuli. Uke'etzem ha'shamayim latahor, and it was as pure as the distilled sky. Oh, what exquisite Hebrew this is! The language creaks under the strain of trying to describe the sight that Moses and the leaders of Israel beheld. God himself standing on what appears to be paving stones of lapis lazuli. The point of the Hebrew is that these are worked stones, stones whose sides have been straightened and made even. The technical name for them is ashlar stones that God is standing upon. And these are no common stones, but lapis lazuli. The Hebrew text describes them as sapphire, but our modern word sapphire doesn't refer to the same stone as the Hebrew word. Lapis lazuli is a dark blue, semi-precious stone found mostly in Afghanistan. In the ancient world, it was highly treasured. Moses struggles to describe these marvelous stones. The Hebrew literally says they were like the bone of the sky with respect to purity. The point is that the blue of the lapis was so intense that it looked like the very bone or essence of sky. That is, sky distilled to the point that it was a solid. And so I translated this difficult but evocative phrase, it was as pure as distilled sky. And these ashlars of the purest lapis lazuli form the pavement on which God stands. Verse 11. Va'el atzile b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. And to, here in the sense of against, the nobles of the sons of Israel, he, that is God, did not stretch out his hand. In this passage, the elders of Israel are described by the unusual word atzil, usually translated nobles based on a later Arabic parallel. The word occurs only here in the entire Old Testament, so its meaning is unclear. The Septuagint translates this with ton epilecton, the chosen ones. Whatever the origin and connotation of the word, it clearly refers to Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel that accompanied Moses up the mountain. Vayakazu et ha'Elohim vayokalu vayishtu'u. And they beheld God, and they ate, and they drank. The eating and drinking described here continues the sharing of the meal that goes with the peace offerings made back in verse 5. Like the tossing of the blood upon both the altar and the people, the eating of this meal together signifies that the participants are joined together. The meal completes the sacrificial act. Now Israel is sealed as the people of Yahweh, and Yahweh is sealed as their God. Well, what shall we say briefly about preaching this text? First, it's important to see that the initiative for this covenant lies with God himself. It is God who has summoned Israel to Mount Sinai, God that has given them his teaching as the basis of the covenant, and God who appears in a wondrous vision to be joined to his people in this relationship. The covenant itself is the external expression of the relationship. It is, and the Old Testament later pictures it, as the marriage ceremony in which God takes Israel to be his bride. In that sense, it is a culmination of all that God has done in bringing Israel out of Egypt. But there's another equally important aspect to this text. We noted the various expressions that underscore the perfect obedience to his teaching that God expects from his people and his people swear to perform. As we said earlier, this leaves a great unanswered question that hangs like the sword of Damocles over the end of this account. What will happen if Israel fails to keep God's teaching perfectly? The answer to that question comes a few chapters further along in the narrative. After Israel breaks the covenant by employing a golden calf in its worship. In response, Israel learns in Exodus chapter 34, verses 5 to 7, that its relationship to God does not depend upon Israel's ability to keep the whole Torah perfectly. It depends upon the gracious character of God Himself. And that is ultimately the gospel message to which this text points. I'm Dr. David Adams, thanking you for joining us for this week's lectionary at lunch as we have examined Exodus chapter 24, verses 3 to 11.